This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
From Transport Topics in Washington, D.C., this is Road Signs. And now here's your host, Michael Fries.
Thank you for listening to Road Signs, the podcast series from Transport Topics that explores the trends and technologies that are shaping the future of trucking. Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome to the 2023 season. Before we dive into today's episode, we'd like to invite you to subscribe to Transport Topics, where you can receive exclusive access to our top 100 lists, quarterly magazines, and other news surrounding the trucking industry. To subscribe, visit ttn.ws/ttsubscribe. You can also text ttsubscribe to 571-622-0001 to become an official member of Transport Topics. That's 571-622-0001. After a year of major business moves and political uncertainty finding their way into the headlines of Transport Topics, we want to use this episode to see what's ahead for the trucking industry. Since we're at the beginning of 2023, we'll ask the question, where are the industry trends that will emerge in 2023? To answer that question, we'll speak with two of our Transport Topics reporters who have spent plenty of time in their respective areas. We'll speak with our congressional reporter, Eugene Malero, about the happenings of the new Congress and how it'll all shape out later in the program. But first, we'll hear what's ahead for the industry with our business reporter, Connor Wolf. Welcome back to the podcast, Connor.
Thank you, Michael. It's great to be here.
Yeah, great to have you back again and back as our first guest for the 2023 season. As we get into this new year, Connor, I know you've done a lot of reporting on the business side of things, specifically the mergers and acquisition activity that's going on in the industry. And it has been busy for 2022 and in years prior. But I mean, in your reporting, there seems to be some signs of a slowdown. I mean, even though they're still going on, some things might be sort of flat. I wouldn't say flatlining, but kind of simmering to the explosion that we had last year. What does your reporting tell us about that?
Completely right. What's basically happening is, when I say a slowdown in my reporting, I think people need to keep in mind this is coming off of an incredibly busy 2022 and 2021. So what we're expecting this year and potentially into the future is still a very active market. It just the conditions are changing a little bit that are indicating that it may not be as active as the last couple of years, which has just been ridiculous. And part of that is a changing in factors, as I said. So since pretty much the start of the pandemic, we've had the cost of capital because of low interest rates has been low and easily accessible. We've had issues the driver shortage and just labor shortage in general across the transportation space that has always been pretty bad, but since the pandemic has reached record levels. And then obviously we had the equipment shortage and then a bunch of other factors that really drove M&A. And basically the way that works is if you have access to capital and you have people who want to sell for whatever reason, maybe they've been in the business for 30 years and it's time to retire and the pandemic kind of pushed them across that line because they're like, this is a stressful job and it's made even more stressful because of the pandemic, time to retire. So they want to sell their business. You have buyers very interested in buying. But what was very interesting is, unlike years before the pandemic, when if you're just a good business, you're going to be attractive to buyers, what ended up happening is even underperforming businesses were attractive to buyers simply because they had equipment and they had labor. So you can have, you could have been the worst carrier in the world and you had assets that people wanted. So basically from, it was a perfect storm, from, the buyer perspective and the seller perspective. From the seller perspective, they were getting high evaluations no matter what. If they were a good business, they were getting really good evaluations. And if they were a bad business, they were still getting pretty good evaluations. And then from the buyer side, buying just made sense because they wanted the equipment. They wanted the people. And then also the other factors that had nothing to do with the pandemic, such as just wanting to diversify and stuff like that, factors that you would normally see in any given year were heightened and intensified simply because businesses kind of realized during the pandemic that if they are singularly focused, that is a bad idea. Because we saw how certain lines, certain verticals were doing really well during the pandemic, reefer for an example, because of the vaccine rollout, while others like auto manufacturing, carriers that are focused on auto parts and the auto industry were not doing that well. So a lot of carriers and a lot of logistics firms realized that diversification was key to their continued success, so that if one vertical or one line was not performing for whatever reason, they would have another one that they could shift their resources to and enhance. So those were all factors that were driving it. Because of the pandemic pretty much being over at this point, obviously it still exists. The coronavirus still exists, and we have variants and all that stuff. And there's still concern. There's still a health, public health issue out there. But generally speaking, when you talk about society and you talk about the economy, things are relatively back to normal, except for those permanent step functions, such as the shift to e-commerce that is that was enhanced during the pandemic, but is probably not going to go away as the pandemic simmers. So we're in a new normal, obviously, but we're in a normal nonetheless. We're not in the heat of the pandemic anymore. And with that, those factors that were driving a lot of the M&A activity are starting to settle down and starting to become normalized as well.
I want to stop you right there, Connor. You just explained just sort of what drived this surgence of M&A activity, and that's been going on, you know, as you said, for years, and pretty much the first three quarters of this last year. But you know, as we had mentioned in the beginning and in the reporting, there have been signs of slowing, and that M&A activity well is, I wouldn't say running dry, but the water is getting low. I mean, is that a good analogy to use in this instance?
Well, yes. And basically the way to understand that is to understand what we're coming off of. And yes, because of this normalization we're seeing with the pandemic, that's affecting the M&A activity, because those factors that were driving it the last few years are starting to settle down as well. And then we have additional factors on top of that, such as interest rates rising makes the cost of capital even higher, which makes it harder for the buyer to do a deal. Another thing is that because things like the driver shortage is still a problem, but is not as big a problem. The latest estimates from the American Trucking Associations showed that it went from a peak, an all-time high of 80,000 last year to 78,000, according to their most recent updated numbers. It's still high. 78,000 is still a big shortage, but it's nowhere near as high as it was. That 2,000 makes a big difference. And so the driver shortage isn't as bad. The equipment issue has been pretty much resolved, because we're starting to get semiconductor chips into the market and stuff like that. So those factors are no longer driving high evaluations for underperforming businesses, or just high evaluations for businesses in general. So that makes some of the sellers, the carriers, a little bit more hesitant to sell as well. So you have a situation where buyers are still interested. They're just not as interested. And you have sellers that are going, well, a year ago, I could have gotten a much better evaluation. What happened to that? Now I'm less interested in selling. And then, as I said, the cost of capital is also higher as well, and that's going to affect it, what buyers are willing to pay as well. However, with all that being said, there's still a lot of activity, and there's still indications that there's going to be a lot of activity this year, just not as much as the last couple of years. And the reasons for that is, one, some of those issues are still relevant. In terms of the driver shortage and equipment shortage, just not as big. And two, the lesson that I mentioned before about diversification of profiles, getting into more lanes, getting into more verticals, that's not forgotten easily. Carriers, logistics firms, and just the financiers that represent them remember that. They remember how easy it was to go out of business or to have a really tough few months if you were too focused on one vertical. And so that factor is still driving some M&A activity because people are still in the process of trying to diversify and trying to get into more verticals and also into other industries. You see a lot of focus on intermodal and different cross sections with where the trucking industry can kind of merge into other types of transportation and other things like that. So that's basically what's going on. We still are likely to see a lot of activity this year, just not as much as the last couple of years. And that's not necessarily a bad thing because the last couple of years have just been absolutely crazy. Though from a seller perspective, I'm sure that that a bunch of carriers that were looking to sell are kind of regretting not getting the higher valuations. But then on top of that, even those carriers that were looking to sell but just were holding off for whatever reason, some of them may be no longer interested in selling, but because of the lower evaluations. But some of them still are interested in selling. Like if you were a CEO and you were committed to retirement, then that's what you want to do.
From time to time, an issue commands so much of the industry's attention that it requires a deeper dive, a resource readers can turn to, a Transport Topics special report. We're turning our attention to another big issue, electrification and the key factors that will drive this industry trend. In every case, we're working to provide our readers with information, analysis, and clarity on key issues confronting fleets. One comprehensive resource packed with insights that can give you the edge. Transport Topics invites you to learn more about our special reports. To reserve your copy of the latest special report, visit ttn.ws/electrification.
I kind of want to really hone in on that particular point, Connor, with those right now sort of kind of in that gray area, you know, where you had that surge of M&A activity. But now it's simmering, but it's still going on. And it's still a viable option for those folks. What is the factor that you've been hearing that what's that one threshold that companies need to get over to, you know, make it a go when it comes to having that particular activity?
Well, it's very individualistic. Those people, those carriers, those business owners that were 100% ready to sell, they were 100% committed. They already sold. They sold the last couple of years. The people that are selling now or potentially selling this year, they were the ones that were maybe on the fence about it or maybe leaning towards it, and were interested in it, but maybe weren't 100% in. And we're starting to see a bit of a spillover effect into this year, basically the ones who didn't do it quite yet, but now they're ready to do it. And the reasons for that are incredibly individualistic. You know, maybe you were thinking of retirement, but you wanted to put in a couple extra years because you really, really like working in the transportation industry and you felt like you had a good couple years left. Maybe you were kind of betting on the market and wondering if evaluations were going to get even higher. Whatever the reason, it's very individualistic, as these things often are, because you're talking about selling your business, which to a lot of these people are like their children. They built them from the ground up, or they bought them when they were small and built them into something bigger, you know, those sort of things. And because of that, it's hard to say what a particular threshold is, except to say that that when evaluations are high, when the market is good, it pushes people over the finish line that were at least considering it. And this year, we're probably going to get some spillover effect of people that weren't 100% committed, but now they're ready for whatever reason.
That being said, with the activity of M&A not being, well, not expected to be robust as it is in, as it was in 2022. I mean, well, is there a chance that it could be as robust and it could be as strong as it was last year, but just for particularly different reasons?
Oh, yeah, most certainly, because like anything in business, we don't know what could happen this year. We could have major upsets that completely change the market, completely change people's perspective of the market or whatever it is that we just weren't expecting. So yeah, this year could be an even bigger year than 2022. However, I think that is probably unlikely because, as I said, 2022 was just a ridiculously busy year. If this year was going to be even busier, it would be surpassing an already ridiculous year. And two, I think just the fact that that the cost of capital is so much higher now, I think that's just going to that's a pretty solid finite thing that we know impacts markets, that we know impacts M&A markets, particularly no matter what industry you're talking about. Obviously, we're talking about the trucking industry, but when the cost of capital is so much higher, that puts a definite damper on it. And until the Fed, the Fed doesn't look like they're interested in lowering interest rates. If anything, they're going to increase them to kind of scave off you know, the threat of recession and stuff like that, which is their prerogative. That's what they're designed to do. At the very least, we're not going to get a lowering of interest rates. And more likely so, we're going to get increased interest rates this year. And that's just going to put a damper on the buyer side. And if buyers can't get as much money, they can't offer as much in the valuation. And that makes sellers less interested. And it also could just make the buyers not interested in buying because they can't get the capital needed for the type of acquisition that they're looking for.
I think that's a good place to leave this conversation. I mean, if we talk about this a little bit further, I have to ask you for your crystal ball. But seriously, Connor, you know, thank you for coming on and explaining this very, very you know, difficult and just sort of ever so moving topic of M&A activity. Thanks for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael. As always, it was a pleasure.
Transport topics in one word: authoritative.
Knowledge.
Outstanding.
Reliable.
We ask Transport Topics readers to describe us in one word.
Informative.
Informative.
Integrity.
The Bible.
Authoritative. The authority.
Transportation information, that's two, but I've got to have it both.
Physically large. Yes.
Oh, that's two words.
Visit influence.ttnews.com/say hello to find out what they're talking about.
Welcome back to Road Signs. We spoke with Connor Wolf about the M&A activity that's going on in the trucking industry. Now we're going to learn what's going on at Capitol Hill with our next guest, Congressional reporter Eugene Malero. Hey, Eugene, welcome back to the show.
Happy New Year. Thanks for having me on.
Happy New Year as well. I just want to inform you, you know, since we are in the beginning of the year, I think you have like a week to say Happy New Year to everyone. I think after the 6th or 7th, that's the cutoff. That's the cutoff date.
You're absolutely right. I agree with that.
So we'll say Happy New Year to our heart's content for just a couple more days. So, yep. but however, we are here to talk about everything congressional, especially when it comes to the trucking industry. And if for those who aren't that politically astute, there is a new party rule in Washington right now. The Republicans are in congressional power, as one would say, and with that, there's a lot of consternation when it comes to focusing on the leader right now. But we're not here to discuss that specifically. We're here to talk about just kind of the oversight when it comes to the transportation industry. And with the Republican rule, there comes new leadership. So my question to you, Eugene, is just in the beginning of things, as the leadership right now is being forged, what does that mean for the leadership in these transportation committees?
Yeah, so that's a good point. Let's operate on the working premise that the Republicans maintain the leadership of, you know, the transportation committees and other policymaking authorities in the House of Representatives. With that said, the likely chairman of the transportation panel is Congressman Sam Graves of Missouri, and he is one who is he has been a trusted figure in transportation circles for about two decades. He served in a ranking capacity on that committee, and he has been very integral on the aviation subcommittee, the highway subcommittee, as well as the oversight jurisdictions of the overall committee. He's a person who has promoted water infrastructure policy, as well as looking to maintain ensure connectivity and productivity along our supply chains. Way before, talking about the supply chain was a cool thing in Washington. But with that said, Michael, while there's an expectation that a chairman, Sam Graves, will be able to advance, policies on water infrastructure primarily, and maybe something on FEMA, the priority, my reporting has really pointing to the main focus of the transportation panel and the overall House leadership is going to be to turn oversight of the Biden administration up to level 11. And I know that's a reference from Spinal Tap, an 80s movie, but they're going to go oversight all the way. And for transportation, that really means the oversight, in-depth oversight. I know I'm all over the place right now, but there has been already oversight under Democrats of this infrastructure law, but the Republicans are pledging to really ramp up the oversight of the implementation of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act.
Now with that, and the gains that the White House has been promoting very heavily since the passage of the of that act, are Republicans there to, oversight, or are they looking to deconstruct that act and kind of take some of the bite out of it?
Yeah, that's a really good point. The correct answer thus far appears to be a little bit of both, in that when it comes to policies that the Republican leadership in the House will categorize as progressive with a capital P, they will look to chip away at that in the infrastructure landscape at the federal level. Now, they're not going to have a partner over on the Senate side. So, the speakership, the chairman, Sam Graves, they can, put together legislation chipping away on the infrastructure law. But when it gets over to the Senate, they're not going to have a reliable partner that will sign off on that and send it over to the White House. So it will be mostly a formality, and then just really playing to your base. That you're standing up against any progressive ideals, give or take. Now, on the flip side, there's the part of this oversight is going to be an expedition. So they're going, you know, the Republican panels are going to proceed with looking at all the agencies at DOT, FMCSA, FHWA, you know, the Federal Railroad Administration. There's usual suspects on the Republicans' radar. Amtrak and Transit are two of them, and climate change. So whatever they find in part of their oversight expeditions that they, you know, may bring consternation, then they can say, okay, this policy here at the Federal Highway Administration, we don't like. We don't like this policy at the Federal Railroad or with Amtrak. You know, so then, you know, let's have an oversight hearing, let's present over legislation. But then again, you funnel that legislation through the chamber, it reaches over to the Senate side. And it's, like I said, it's very unlikely that a Senate Democratic majority will sign off on anything that would chip away at the infrastructure law, especially since the infrastructure law, you know, has been touted by the bipartisan leadership over on the Senate. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell and President Biden are touting infrastructure dollars this month that were approved in the infrastructure law that are going to repair the Brent Spence Bridge.
You know, as you were just saying, the proposed order of things when the Republicans have their role and everyone gets sworn in their committee seats. Is that going to be just the harbinger of things to come when it's just going to be saber rattling versus, actually trying to get some policy in there? I mean, is that the chasm that we're going to be accustomed to for the next 2 years?
Yeah. So, you know, these oversight hearings on Capitol Hill, especially in the modern era, have a tendency to, for lack of a better term, go off the rails, especially if you have some members of Congress from either side, Republicans and Democrats, who get very passionate about a certain issue. So let's take, for instance, climate change. If there's an oversight hearing at the Transportation Committee that is very focused on climate change or the issue of climate change comes up, and you're a member of Congress who's anti doing anything on climate change, you're likely to, you know, draw attention to your viewpoint, and that viewpoint may gain most of the debate because you'll have your opponent. You create a debate at the committee, and your focus on oversight goes now into politics rather than policy. So, you know, to your point on policymaking, I know for a fact my reporting is really pointing to the fact that policymaking is something that, you know, especially the moderate Republicans want to achieve in this upcoming Congress. But policymaking, the arena for passing legislation and for considering, you know, anything over on the House and even the Senate has it's very limited window. So how you dedicate your time, you know, how much oxygen you dedicate, you know, on the floor for a certain issue, you know, it's very, very limited. So if if a party really goes all in on oversight and that tilts over to politics, you leave very little room for policymaking.
With that, let's kind of get into policy making. Earlier last year, I could say, is it too premature to say last year since it was?
No, it's accurate. Yeah, you can do it. 2022.
Last year in August, this past August, I'll say that this past August, you know, there was the Congressional Autonomous Vehicle Caucus. You know, that was something bipartisan. Speaking of policy. That was, put into place, to expand access to autonomous vehicles. Was something like that still hold well in this new Congress? I mean, it was just formed 6 months ago, but caucuses like that and just having, I think the autonomous centric policies, you know, that seems to be something that brings the Republicans and Democrats together for different reasons. But will ideas like that, resolve in any type of, you know, solid policy for this particular session?
There is a very strong likelihood that an autonomous vehicle legislation will be introduced on the House side, and that bill could very well pass out of the chamber and reach the Senate side. This legislation is very likely to pave the way for a national framework for autonomous technologies, especially for automated, you know, cars and trucks, probably. There is Senate buy-in for such legislation. The White House has really expressed interest on this type of technology. We have arrived at a moment in our country where autonomous vehicles are not a thing of sci-fi. They're actually a reality. Mm-hmm. So yes, there is an expectation that this type of bill could really be get a lot of energy on Capitol Hill, House and Senate. However, Michael, we are living in a very politically active environment at the national level. And what has happened in recent years is that the emotions of a very high energy political environment, that is capable of deterring or eclipsing work on other pieces of legislation. I'm not even presenting a hypothetical. To give you a real example, if you are, you know, proceeding with impeachment of a judge or even the president, then that party pursuing impeachment very likely alienates a vast amount of the opposition party. So now the opposition party is unlikely to work with you on very basic bills, like funding bills for the government, which is what we saw with Republicans and Democrats when the Democrats were pursuing impeachment of the former president. So that is, you know, that is the fine line, you know, with Congress right now is, you know, how much energy do you, so House Republicans are, there have been members of the House Republican caucus who have really said the I word, impeachment of President Biden or a cabinet secretary. So if that is the case, you know, how much appetite is there from the Democrats, who will be the opposition party or the minority party, to work with Republicans on autonomous vehicles legislation, not to use a hypothetical, a real life example, if the same people, you know, in the majority are going after your guy, you know, that kind of thing. So the politics do get in the way, it can get very messy, even though there is a bipartisan agreement on some big ticket bipartisan issues, such as autonomous vehicles.
You know, before I get you out of here, Eugene, you know, you were talking about, you know, just the hyper political tension that's been in this town of DC for quite some time. We can kind of get into that a little bit, and it really bleeds into, you know, transportation affairs, especially when it comes to the southern border, which is a major freight corridor for our country. And, you know, the House Republicans also have plans in that regard, too. Through your reporting, could you explain what they want to do in terms of just the management of the southern border?
Yeah. So the big focus for the House Republican leadership right now is to replace the leadership at the Department of Homeland Security, do away with Secretary Mayorkas, bring in a new secretary who is able to commit to this caucus that she or he would be, in their terms, in their words, more aggressive, you know, in deterring or minimizing, you know, illegal crossings at the southern border, as well as, you know, getting the Biden administration to commit additional resources of, you know, of all kind, not only manpower, but also the, you know, federal executive rules and, you know, the strength of the federal government, you know, to address illegal crossings. You know, that is something that debate and that emphasis on, you know, the southern border has the potential to impact or affect, you know, international commerce, because you could be in a situation where the cross country jurisdictions, you know, may be caught, the government of Texas and the government of, you know, border towns in Mexico with Texas border towns may be caught in the mix of federal jurisdiction, and all that, you know, could slow down the movement of freight. And, you know, and that is something that the federal government and these countries have sought to protect, you know, with treaties and other partnerships, because they and, you know, supply chain resilience, because they do recognize, you know, the economic importance of smooth commerce between the countries. So that is the southern border is something that is high on the priority list for the House Republican caucus. But Michael, I go back again to Senate Democrats kind of playing referee or even goalie, you know, holding the line on a lot of the Biden administration policies and making sure that, you know, they remain in place for the next 2 years at least.
Well, it sounds like that 2023 is going to be an entertaining, if not productive year for the new Congress. You know, and with this whole year, I guess you could say this is the calm. This is the calm before the storm of next year, when we were going to be talking about presidential elections and all that jazz. So I guess with all of the trouble and drama that's ahead for this year, this is going to be totally mild when it comes to next year. So
yeah, you're right. This year is going to be the setup for the political environment next year, which for both parties, you know, there's an expectation there's going to be a lot of fireworks.
Oh yeah, in a town that is so used to political fireworks, it'll just be a Thursday. So
exactly, you're right. That's right.
So, but with that, you know, thank you very much, Eugene Malero. He is our congressional reporter for Transport Topics. Eugene, always a pleasure to have you on. I have so much fun when I talk to you about politics and the things that were going on in Congress.
And you get another Happy New Year.
Yes, there we go. Happy New Year to you as well.
Did you know you can ask Alexa to open Transport Topics? In just 1 minute, you will hear the biggest trucking headlines of that day. Be prepared and start your morning off right with Transport Topics.
Before we close, let's take a moment to revisit our original question. What are the industry trends that will emerge in 2023? As we heard from our guests, after a year of major business moves and political uncertainty, 2023 is poised to see more of it. However, as Connor stated, on the mergers and acquisition side, buyers and sellers alike are proceeding with more caution as recession fears mature into full-blown anticipation. Despite it all, the outlook is still positive. On the legislative side, a Republican-led majority is currently providing some uncertainty as leadership is struggling to be forged. Once the dust settles, the lawmaking path for a transportation agenda, as well as governance, will become much clearer. As Eugene mentioned, the new congressional session will be filled with much political drama that is sure to play itself out in 2023. Make sure to watch this space. If you enjoyed this episode of Road Signs, please let others know. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts. Feel free to reach out to the Road Signs team on Twitter at TT Road Signs, or reach me at Michael V. Freeze. You can email us at share@ttnews.com. We'll read them and respond daily. Also, let us know how we're doing by texting TT Survey to 571-622-0001. And of course, we'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode of Road Signs. Until then, I'm Michael Freeze. Thank you for listening.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. you'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.